Education Committee will come to order. Today is Thursday, March 26, 2020, and the time is 8:07 a.m. Members of House Education present are Representative Amy Sully, co-chair. Representative Delaney Johnson is on the phone. Representative Greer Hopkins is right here. Representative Tiffany Zukoski is on the phone. Representative Chris Tuck is in the room. And myself, Representative Harry Drum. We have a quorum to conduct business. Before we begin, I'd like to remind everyone that some of cell phones are recording Secretary Shannon McCain, and Brett Collins is our alarm moderator, assisting with tech and teleconferencing support. Thank you both. When we left off yesterday morning, we had finished with two appointees to the Board of Education and Early Development, but we were mostly through hearing from Ron Wheels, appointee to the Professional Teaching Practices Commission, where we asked him to be in line for any remaining questions committee members might have. Anyone have any questions for Mr. Wheels? Mr. Wheels, you're on the phone with us.
You are.
Okay, great, thank you. It doesn't appear that anyone has any further questions for you. Thank you for your service, and you're welcome to hang on and hear for the rest of the meeting, or I'm sure you're working with your students in any way that you can, and we appreciate your work. Thank you, sir. In addition, we will continue hearing from Ashley Barrett of Fairbanks, who has appointed, to the University of Alaska Board of Regents. When we got in, I would say that, let's see, Ashley, thanks, good morning, Ms. Barrett.
Good morning,
say that he said don't hesitate to contact me on any issue, which I assume was the end of her presentation. Is that correct? Thank you, Representative Starr. We will take a brief at ease while we're trying to take a look. much we need to have. This is a large, complex bill. I just want to say, for the record, we're in very strange times. While the Finance Committee and the Conference Committees work on getting us to the finish line of the budgets, we are continuing to do work on this important bill. In fact, we as far as we can before we recess for health reasons and all of that stuff. We're at about day 66, which is, we're still a month off from statutory adjournment and 2 months off from constitutional adjournment. So our responsibility is to work on the bills that are before us in this committee. And this one's a big one. So when we left off in our last meeting, we were reviewing the five fiscal notes for House Bill 153. And the Director of Administrative Services, Heidi Tischer, and they were draft notes at that point. Please note that these fiscal notes have been provided at your desks earlier in the order of discussion. Let's see, Director Heidi Tischer, are you on the phone with us?
Good morning, can you hear me?
We can hear you loud and clear. Ms. Tischer, I know we went partway through the fiscal notes. Last meeting, there was some confusion about the numbers, so if you would readdress the fiscal notes starting from the beginning, committee members can ask questions as we go along. Is that acceptable?
Okay, yes. Yeah.
it's more or less looking back at the previous set of fiscal notes, this cost, and then we're moving out the section, we're moving to the out years, the section on reading proficiency. Is that correct? $4,685 because I thought our BSA was roughly $6,000.
Thank you.
thousands or hundreds of dollars. And ordinarily, school districts would be buying, and in the last page of the fiscal auction has a line for commodities, which I assume is the supplies, the textbooks, and so on. I'm not sure what I'm using textbooks for kindergartners, but the commodities line is the one that supplies all this material to schools. And ordinarily, that is done by the schools or the school district, and in this case, it's being done by the department. Is that correct? Reading specialists are hired and directed by the department, and they will be sent to the first starters, the 10 lowest performing schools. And those costs, the travel costs, and all of that are covered by the department.
My understanding that there would be, hired from the community, but living in the community, part of the school community.
It would have to increase the same amount roughly every year. If we're adding, we're starting out with almost 10%, and then we're going for the next 10%, and over 10 years we're getting to all the schools. Am I thinking about that correctly?
Thank you.
That's the whole point.
schools per district, and then if you're talking about the Fairbanks or Anchorage's, Fairbanks has got different things in it. So, just the way that this is structured, it's confusing, I guess, but I admit the department has figured that out. That's all that really matters in the rest of that. Not going to work out the same per district. It's going to work out more per school, or if there's a school with a few hundred, there might be a couple hundred students in grades 1 to 3 in a school district in Fairbanks, as opposed to there's only going to be 4 or 5. School district. So, a rural school has to be figured out on a per student and not stumbling.
It's hard to get your arms around, but
right.
I think I would like more to address every kindergarten through grade 3 student all at once, but we don't have the capacity to do that. I know the department is going to have trouble hiring that many reading specialists. It will be hard to find in small rural communities, but the goal is to work with each district and make sure that they have the appropriate assistance.
Clarifying one particular issue. I know our center perhaps brought up at the beginning, which is the difference between the early education grant program and the school improvement program. These are two separate programs. The early education grant program will be serving the non-competitive districts, and that is representative of fiscal notes number 5 and also fiscal note number 1. That is the number 4. So we're talking about fiscal note 141 and OMB 141. We're talking about fiscal note OMB 3028 and fiscal note 2804 under the 2804. The school improvement program will not be serving 100% of districts. It is primarily focused on the lowest performing 10% of districts. So that particular program that is talking about the reading specialists is focused on those lowest performing school districts. Those do not necessarily include the Big 5, which you would consider the Anchorage, Juno, Mattsu. Those are mostly in outlying areas. Just my personal experience, school districts like the Barrier School District have something like 60 schools within its purview. So, our school districts are very large in their service areas.
But this will expand to include the Big 5, for example, but that's 5 or 6 years out. Right. We're starting with the lowest performing 10 schools in the state, and we have just over 500 schools in the state. So this is, in my opinion, it starts too slowly, but we can afford to do them all at once. And the early education piece will give all those 4-year-olds a leg up and help them get started early. So that's what works in progress.
I think I need to let this go right now.
Continuing with the
actually the average trial for statewide three-year assessment and training could potentially be done remotely, considering the remote for right now. We're learning a lot about remote opportunities and ways of learning, and not only in education, but in every single department. So it's possible that by the time this happens, that training could be done remotely. Ms. Fletcher?
Yeah, sure. And we will do the everything we can to provide remote training as best as possible to support districts.
Okay. Well, see, no questions at this point. Go ahead, Ms. Fletcher. Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to move on to the next step for now, which is the early learning coordination. I will be confirming number 2912.
Our department staffers, and they will be working with early childhood educators in districts around the state. Is that correct? Thank you. first year is approximately $1.7 million. Is this why I thought that the preschool programs saved $5.6 million and then $4.3 million in the operating budget? So 1.6, excuse me, 1.7 and 4.3 million is 6 million. There's our $6 million in pre-K programs. Am I correct?
Thank you.
application formula and the grant program would be operating simultaneously?
Yes,
we have to look at. Okay, and when are the grants get incorporated into the foundation formula? At 51.6 million?
I'm not sure, the 51.6 million is the 3-year grant program itself. Just the 3-year grant program. And that is the ones that are reflected in the 51 regular estimate. Yeah, once they go up for the 3 years, or they need an additional year because they're already paid for work, they're kind of approved by the State Board of Education to make it forward to the foundation formula.
Okay, so that 51.6 million grant will eventually go away as the early childhood programs are incorporated into the foundation formula. Is that correct?
Correct.
So I'm just not sure I'm going to go to the top. I just have to speak louder. Okay, I'm just going to take off of the season. Okay. All right. Any questions on this list below? What's that?
Sounds like that page is great page.
Yeah, once you can figure out what it means, you can slide it pretty well. And I think it would be great to run it out to 2031 so that we can see when the grant program disappears and it becomes fully funded through the foundation. In fact, we've actually, if I'm understanding this correctly, it's actually cheaper to fund it through the foundation. Is that right, Ms. Tashner?
Thank you.
University of the Head Start students at approximately 1,600 at Temple One.
That is
correct. With the development offices under Greenwich, through the chair, we have numerous conversations with Head Start programs and really talked this fall with Eric and Frank, who have two memos as well, regarding this particular bill holds Head Start for our list as the intent and goal is to ensure that those programs continue to offer their high quality programming for students 3 to 4 years of age, and this really focuses on high quality pre-K service, which is ages 4. That's not starting early. That's not. It's the 3 year olds. Questions about this issue? Get more safe rocks, but
I'll be going through what the big question point about the private, existing private preschool programs. And there's some other things where there's a couple of preschool operators that were concerned about this program's impact on their service. And I suppose the first one is saying I consulted with them, with the private preschoolers, to the idea of how they're going about it. And then also understood that the impact on them or that they participate in this summer.
Most of those testifying were daycare programs. They talked about. Those are much younger kids. We're only talking about 3 year olds in Head Start, in early Head Start, and obviously there aren't too many if there are 1,580 Head Start students in Title I or 4 year olds, is that correct? Okay, so I'm assuming there could be an equivalent number of 3 year olds. Districts also operate special ed programs for students who identify Head Start at the age of 3, but this is not going to impact infant care or toddler care. This is kids on a pedigree ready to start thinking about being prepared for school, or at least their parents should be thinking about being prepared for school. That's a whole different conversation, and we do have a shortage. We have an extreme shortage of child care slots, but that's a different discussion in this particular bill. In terms of private schools, as a former Anchorage school board member, the Anchorage district surveyed all the private K-12 schools in the Anchorage area annually and queried them about their populations so that we knew how many kids in Anchorage were going to public schools and how many were going to private schools. But that was a long time ago. There's a lot more homeschooling going on now. It's going on through families. It's going on through charter schools. And charter schools being operated from many locations in the state. So that's harder to look at. But THREAD, the early childhood organization based in Anchorage, has a pretty good handle on those kinds of numbers. But that, again, that early childhood, early care is a different conversation that we're having regarding this bill.
Through the chair, if I also may address this question, I do want to bring your attention to that this particular bill is about universal voluntary preschool. It does not mandate the fact that the individual wants to put the child into a private preschool program. It's not allowed for that opportunity. This bill simply focuses on offering pre-K to everyone regardless of their socioeconomic status, and really focuses on school readiness. So it's really trying to address those 3 year olds who don't know how to sit and stand in line, or the 3 year olds who need to learn the colors of their numbers, or preparing them to read.
Thank you.
As for the chair, I'm going to get back to Head Start because I'm not quite sure how the programs will be dealing with Head Start because many of our districts, we share facilities, and we have some nice linkages between Head Start and kids just going naturally into their school districts. And I'm wondering if in the bill it would be important for clarity, because we have memorandums of agreements with a lot of our Head Start programs about how we use things jointly. And I know we start. For providers, and I know you've been working with the healthcare providers, and have you talked about how to perceive that there is a good partnership and working together? And what is your thought about the memorandum of agreement? And through the chair, this is a different kind of record. I will ask the district TV department present the volunteer speakers as well. But with our conversations with pre-registered Head Start programs, we were working on a particular provision on page 11 of the bill that really deals with accommodating and working with existing programs and grants associated with status. We had to get something that might not be as clear as the intent in the bill language, which is the focus on working with existing programs of famous 3 to 5 year olds in their communities. So we're looking to try to figure out how to tighten that up to achieve what that is the intent of the line that's talking towards at the very bottom of page 11. Additionally, we've heard from several districts that offer Head Start and pre-K programs to their students at different points during the day and potentially maybe in different facilities within their district. And there's nothing that's built up includes someone or a district from offering that. They might have Head Start students in the morning and one student and have those same students from one of the pre-K programs over in the afternoon. That is a lot of the bill. The bill does prohibit against double dipping. So you cannot have students who are enrolled in a pre-K program and also enrolled in a Head Start program at the same time. You cannot receive federal funds and state funds for the same student at the same point in time. A couple of lines there on page 11. The very last line. As the chair, that would be line 29, subsection D. As I mentioned before, with our intent for that to be working with existing programs, it may not have been the cleanest language, and so we are looking to amend that, which we would entertain in anyone's interest in how we would amend that language. For other recommendations from this, I will. Thank you.
Well, okay. So Head Start programs are fully or half day.
I think I don't really answer that question, but I can definitely go back to
you. So we're looking at our half day preschool programs. So the emphasis on the continued pre initiatives with childcare and so on and so forth, but we will eventually come out of a place where we are now with this COVID-19 situation, and we have to plan ahead because, as we all know, there are pregnant ladies right now having children in the midst of all of this, and we're wondering what to be there for their kids when we come out on the other side of this. So we know that we have to be
forward-thinking. I think the bill does allow for a full day program for pregnant. It doesn't necessarily start the full day pregnant program. That's correct.
Okay, Ms. Kisher. instructional analysis in front of us. All models should have it. It's titled CS for HP153 last reader, sectional analysis of one-point for CS sponsors, that's in the hospital 153 EDU, for P31LS 0928-U. Right? All set? Okay.
I'll be walking through the data section, which expands specific solutions to provide more clarity and in-depth information. So, as we mentioned, that section 1 establishes the outcome of the Alaska Review Act. Section 2 amends Alaska statute to include the Alaska Department of Education Early Development Approved Early Education Program, including Head Start, as a part of an elementary school. Amends Alaska statute. Section 3 amends Alaska statute.
This might be because of folks who talked about if I was answering to make an amendment to include item around the agreement with an answer, it gives you know, some language. It just seems to make sense to have it right there. Just wanted to comment on that.
Section 3 amends Alaska Statute 13.03.072, Section A, to include reading intervention services in addition to intervention strategies for early literacy. Section 4 amends.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm really hoping for me to ask some questions as we go along because I think it helps us all to understand the Alaska Retail, what it hopes to accomplish. And when I've been looking at this, one thing that was really important to me is that we have our basic reading program, that every core instruction that we have a scientific evidence-based program, all of this is very important. Academia is all the components that you have detailed and great, gone into great detail, but we should all have that going all the time. And then if that's to our return program, and then we happen to teach for the interventions. And we know that most of our students in the state are not reading and are proficient at the end of third grade. And we do not have 50% to 60% of our students on intervention programs. So it's critical that our core programs, that our teachers get the support and the strength to deliver on that. And so what I'm saying in here is, it seems like here somewhere in the Alaska Read Act, we need to talk about the importance of our core reading programs. And I would like the committee to think about it here from the traditional center of attention about where in the bill should we be having something like each district will provide to lead the scientific evidence-based core reading instruction program they are using, and their reading instruction practices, informal assessments, and their curriculum, just so we have a baseline of what we are doing in our early media programs across the state. This is natural, we should know that. And we should, as policy makers, I really want to know anyway why my district is using an evidence based scientific reading program. And then it seems like, so once you know what that is, I would really be more of a department work in partnership with the district to maybe analyze the core reading program. And then that analysis be shared with the local school board members and the community so they know that they got good sound of the core reading program. And then part of that community team would provide access to supportive, intensive teacher training and scientific evidence-based training. And I just want to be sure that under the state reading act that we know we have brought these programs and we know. So I wanted to offer that up for the committee to chew on because I think that's just should be we should know that we are sure to have. And when I looked at section 3, I perhaps you want to do this very thoroughly. It seems to me that in a, when we're going to talk about it, your parents and guardians of the students and rules of the kindergarten to third grade, when we're talking about the importance of early reading and including, do you think you would start with number four? First thing you want to do with parents is you want to give them strategies and resources to help them learn to read normally. Then, the right home reading plans, then intervention strategies and reading intervention services. And then, at level three, rather than grade retakes and standards, I think we want them through grade proficiency standards so they know what they're aiming for their students and their policies for the elementary school. Including retention, if that's what you wanted to add. But I'm sorry to look at this as this is our last reject. We want to be our programs are delivering core grade reading instructions that are based, and we want our parents to know, you know, those strategies and resources that we have. We want them to develop great proficiency standards so they know what they're aiming for. It just maybe this seems to be more positive that way, so.
Section 4, and you're talking about scientific-based reading programs, and what did you just talk about all this in Section 3?
Thank you. I was thinking Section 3, because in the B, so it first says on A, the district shall provide the parents information, and then I was thinking in B, it should be each district shall annually provide to the department scientific evidence-based core reading intervention structure program that you are using, the reading intentional practices, informal assessment practices, and curriculum materials. And I also wanted to add to that, including their culturally relevant place-based materials, because we have this formal reading program, but it's also really important in your local program that you have your culturally relevant materials with them. So, it's like the district shall, and then the district shall also in number E, let E know what they're using, so we're sure what that is. And then, so that was a B. And then the C was the department in partnership with the district shall analyze their core reading programs. And then that was just to be in partnership, should be shared with their school board and their community. And then D was to provide building teacher training and support for the scientific evidence-based program. And I believe many districts are doing this, but we need, I want to have the comfort of knowing that. And then what follows is more than you're going into the intervention programs, but I think it's important to know what our core reading programs are that they're scientific-based.
To mention, divide our rate section 3 and section 4, section 3 is an annual report to parents. You bring this to the section 4 is reported to the legislature, so I'm not sure if you really want this in section 3 or this in section 4. It's what I was asking. Where you want this.
Okay.
If you want the parents to involve it, that's fine. But if you want to actually just report for them, so you can do that. And all I know is this parents' annual report to the parents is it's, as I understand, it's trying to resource them to learn to read. And I think it's also important for parents to know when your children may want to retain or not retain them, because it's a parental choice on them. So I think that's actually important. All the same as health, if you ever have been a farm with that, but I always think it's more important to have that in the second floor.
I agree. I think we do need to know what our districts are currently doing, and I'm going to assume that the department is going to assist with the districts are doing. What if they don't wish to do this making, then I'll pass the windows behind your desk. And all because some districts have embarked on improved reading programs here in the last several years. So we may not have to provide this program to every single district as they're coming along. We have to know all that, so I appreciate your concern.
Well, thanks for all of that. I did have a brief conversation with the commissioner about the concern that he recognized and that he was going to perhaps get some thoughts about where he felt that information should be, but I just didn't mind looking at all grades and not say from me there at the beginning of the exact hours on the phone if you'd like to wait right now. Did you think about that?
Commissioner? That's correct.
Okay.
restrictions for people on this, but, you know, if we're working on early childhood part and making sure kids are ready, and they finally walk into kindergarten, this may eventually be a moot point. So let's just consider that as a future topic of discussion and follow up right now.
But through the chair, we are on section 6, which runs along with section 14.03.00, and then a new subsection G, which changes the date the child is eligible to enter a public early education program. For section 5, it changes from September 1st to June 1st, preceding the beginning of the school year. And in section 6, it changes a new addition to the statute allows for classes at least 4 but no more than 5 before June 1st, preceding the beginning of the school year, to attend or may enter a public school early education program. Chair, we have compulsory attendance from ages 7 to 16.
Which is a mandatory people would like to add faculty. The late Senator Benny Davis, after whom this room is named, had a bill in for years and years and years to change compulsory education languages, both at the beginning of school and at the end of school. And we might need to discuss that at some point.
Section 7 amends the Alaska Statute 14.03.102 by adding a new subsection, which establishes annual reporting requirements for school districts regarding student performance metrics in grades K through 3. Included in these new performance metrics are information relating to class size, the number and percentage of students in K through 3 who are proficient in grade level skill reading, and the number of students and percentages of students who are attaining from advancing in grades K through 3. Currently, none of this information is reported by districts, and this will help us to inform future legislature and future policy.
Okay, so I'm looking at the work graph of the family, I think it was the last on page 4. And it seems that the department would also want to give the percentage of students who are receiving various lunches out of each classroom. I know part of the sponsor statement talks about the importance of giving more supports to children. And when we're looking at how that oftentimes it's been some of the data that they come in, if not as much literacy experience and what average language experiences, that I would think that would give more information to the district, although as a school board member, we really see in what first grade if you've got a class that does a lot of times is very well in person. And you look at the economics sometimes when those children aren't coming in with as much college literacy rich experiences. And it seems that the department would want to know the ad percentage. I'm going to make an amendment to add that. So I think it would be helpful. Also, on number 2, line 7, which now talks about growth characters we can demonstrate improvement. Page 4. The draft line 7. I was thinking it'd be nice to use those standard language we use for assessments.
assessments. I think it's fair. I can definitely make the recommendation to board approval. I know that I started the board growth and they changed it to improvement, so I'll have to ask what it is that we're doing.
I was saying the same thing on line 13, number D, where if you demonstrate proficiency versus sufficient, because we always want you to say proficient, that's kind of the language we use.
Thank you.
in the field that we're trying to be in there, the retention is not mandatory. Sizes have gotten too large for teachers to pay sufficient attention to these youngsters who really need, they really need the ability to focus, and they can't do that in a class of 25 kindergartners. I can imagine if I have to teach one kid, the entire issue is if never mind 25 of them without any additional help. Size is a critical issue. Not too bad. That was one of the reasons why I suggested having after that, having the number two. The two being bringing the percentages of students in for use lunch and also special education. Because in between, there's two levels of special education in these levels. Level one, level two in the class, and then we talk about kids and one teacher's lab six. I'm just calling her because I usually
already heard of is, you know, Q1 instruction, there's two instruction levels, which are 1 to 2 until 3, and 2 levels are basically touching every DP3 in the program, which is kind of their core reading program, is what the teachers are using. This is the open record of sandwich. Section 8 is a long section. It creates a stair-step, three-year grant program. And this grant program is to provide training and assist the school district in developing an early education program, an early education program that is defined as pre-K. In year one, the lowest performing 10% of school districts will be eligible for a grant to establish a district-wide high-quality early education program. In year two, the next lowest performing 15% of school districts will be eligible for that three-year grant program. In year three, the grants will be available to the third lowest performing 15% of districts, then the third highest 20% of school districts in year four, and the second highest performing 20% of school districts in year five, and finally, the highest performing 20% of school districts in year six. Over 6 years, all school districts will have been offered the opportunity to participate. At the end of the three-year grant cycle, DEEP will be responsible for determining if the district's early education program compiles with state is in alignment with state standards and as established by the State Board of Education.
Hold on, we have Representative Zulkowski. I have a question.
With pre-K education.
Section 9 of the Wisconsin Statute 14.07.020, subsection A, and directs DEEB to supervise all early education programs, approve those early education programs established under AS 14.03.410. The section also establishes the new reading program, which will be detailed later in a later section, and also the reading intervention programs at participating schools, which will also be detailed later in a later section. Section 10, the definition of early education program, is a pre-K program for students 3 to 5, if the primary function is educational. The 3-year-old students are not included in the program of this bill, but are included in this definition to ensure they are not excluded from existing state and federal programs. Section 11 allows DEEB to supply supplemental reading textbook materials relating to intervention services. Section 12 amends Alaska Statute 14.07.165, subsection A, relating to the duties of the State Board of Education and Early Development, and directs the board to adopt regulations establishing standards for an early education program that is half day or full day or less than half day and is locally designed and evidence-based. The lead teacher of the program must hold a valid teaching certificate and have satisfactorily completed a minimum of 6 credit hours in early education, early childhood education, or completed 6 credits within 1 year of their teaching or their teacher's employment, or have 2 or more years of experience teaching kindergarten or another early education program. Regulation must also be established to develop an appropriate objectives and accommodations for all children, which allows districts to adapt content to be culturally appropriate and to local communities.
Yes, thank you. For the chair, looking at under 5.5, requirement that the teacher in charge of a city school district program, because there's many, there can be many schools in a district. So I'm wondering if that is what the intent is, or are you just saying, because I know that paraprofessionals somebody's classrooms under the direction of a teacher in charge. So I'm wondering if that needs to be clarified. Is that the district or school level? And it could be a big difference between the availability of trained staff and again the person who is doing instruction at a district level or schools. Rural areas have a paraprofessional in the classroom or under the direction of the teacher. And then I'm wondering about where qualifications, if there could be a under B, if there could be what is a smaller I, whether with 2 and with 3, or could there be something for what the qualifications of a Head Start teacher are, not only what they are.
I think the chair only relates to pre-K programs. It does not define or amend any statute that relates to who leads or does not lead a Head Start program. I would recommend not inserting that into this section.
Where's Head Start? Everybody else, I need to know that the reports need to be before me for 10 o'clock. Get tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock. And I think that this committee meets at 8, so we can get it worked out before the session and all of that other stuff starts during the day.